It's Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
We'll be in and out. Anyway, you've never seen my lab.
Oh, great. I get to see your nerd lab.
Hello, mediocre hockey team. This is Technically Correct. I'm Tyler Bischoff. He's Jared Justice. The Golden Knights might not be very good. Ryan will also join us a little bit later to talk about the Golden Knights. We'll also get into some UNLV football because they're definitely not very good. Get into the Raiders as well because they might be the worst. Actually, we're going to start with the Golden Knights, though. First off, Jared is kind of getting into hockey analytics, maybe?
Well, I like all analytics. So
you're asking me a lot of questions about hockey analytics, and I was excited.
Well, I was trying to relate them to the other analytics that I understand from various other sports, and
it's hard to do.
Yeah, it is.
It's a very different sport from basketball or football.
But it almost seems like on the offensive end, it is similar to a lot of basketball, like positionless analytics, like
fill
your zone and move to these locations because this shot is more efficient type things. But you,
the slot is the efficient spot. The house is the area right in front of the net.
Yeah.
From the face-off dots to the net. That's the slot. Get there. Shoot from there.
So I'm trying my best.
Don't let Jack Eichel shoot from there with no defenders near him if you're the Golden Knights, who lost 4-2 in Buffalo yesterday. The Buffalo Sabres took 17 shots in the game and scored 4 goals.
That's a pretty good per.
The Golden Knights took 37 shots on goal and only scored twice. So it's 3 games. But the Golden Knights might not be that good. Marc-Andre Fleury, maybe he's not that good. They're 1-2 now. They've given up 10 goals in 3 games, which actually isn't that ridiculously bad, but 5 goals in one game, 4 goals in another game, that's what's not so great. Fleury has given up 5 goals on 16 shots in game 1 and 4 goals on 17 shots in game 3 of the season. Meanwhile, the offense has scored a whopping 5 goals in 3 games. So through 3 games, and this is sort of good for the analytical things, we sort of have a quality versus quantity issue at the moment. The Golden Knights offensively, 10th in the NHL in total shot attempts per 60 minutes in 5-on-5. But they're only 18th in scoring chances, 4 in 5-on-5. So they're getting a decent amount of shots. They're just not getting a lot of quality shots so far this year. Quantity's there, the quality's not.
Is that come down to personnel, or is that more positioning? I'm asking a really rudimentary question, aren't I?
Yeah, I mean, you have somebody like Jonathan Marchessault who just shoots from everywhere. And honestly, if you look at like Eric Halla's goal yesterday, was not a quality shot. Like, it was just he just flung a wrister on goal from like right outside the faceoff circle. And it went in, so it wasn't really a quality shot. But they haven't been getting great chances. Like, they haven't been getting the shots in the slot right in front of the net. Defensively, though, this is where you should be optimistic about the Golden Knights, because defensively, they're second best in terms of scoring chances allowed. So, like, they're not giving up that many quality chances. The underlying numbers suggest the Golden Knights are going to be fine. They're going to be pretty good, actually. But if you do, like, shooting percentage, the Golden Knights have not scored on what's defined as a scoring chance yet this year. All of their goals have come from basically non-quality shots. When they get a good chance to score, they haven't scored this year. Does that make your head hurt? You look confused.
So are they they're getting, like, again, to mix metaphors, but they're getting like Dwayne Wade threes.
And they're going in.
Yeah, and they're going in, but LeBron near the rim are...
And not going in. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's...
Paul Stastny's missing some open nets. He's got to get better. On the flip side of that, probably shouldn't blame Marc-Andre Fleury, but Fleury's got to bail them out a little bit more, or at least he did this a lot more last season, because right now, and again, we're 3 games in, so we're talking really small sample size, but the Golden Knights are third worst in terms of opponents' shooting percentage on scoring chances at 15%. Last year, they were like 8%, I think the Golden Knights were. Their opponents were, I should say. So it's not really Fleury's fault when a guy's all by himself in front of the net, but last season, Fleury would bail them out sometimes on those plays. This year, he hasn't really done very much of that. So they've got to convert more on their chances. They've got to create some more quality chances too. But if you look at it, the underlying numbers kind of suggest this team should be okay. Maybe not best in the West or top three or four in the West, but they should be fine going forward. But Jared, this team needs to be good. Like, we really need this team to be good.
Because everything else is bad?
Yeah. All of the teams we cover, either like really heavy or really light, suck. Like, the Golden Knights are 1-2 now. They're supposed to be the good one. UW football is 2-3 and doesn't look good going forward. Lights FC are 7-18-7. UNLV basketball was 20-13 last year. Didn't come close to the NCAA tournament, but it's a winning record. The Aces were 14-19. The Aces thing is weird to me.
They almost made the playoffs.
Well, because we had this weird, like, month-long stretch where, A, they were playing well, but people around the city were acting like they were good. Like, they put a jersey up on the Statue of Liberty, which I know MGM owns the team, and that's a big reason why. But it was like, oh, the Las Vegas Aces. They're good. They finished ninth in a 12-team league. They did not have a good season. They had a bad season, but whatever. And then the 51s, which actually had a winning record, 71-69. But, like, they didn't make the playoffs either. It's like, none of the teams would cover any good, except the Golden Knights are supposed to be. So we need them to be good.
Not to get into minor league baseball, they also didn't have a winning record until, like, 7 games left in the season.
Listen, none of these other teams we talk about have one except UNLV basketball.
Don't know why I needed to qualify
the 51's record.
They actually sucked worse than you thought.
Jake Bischoff has to play tomorrow.
Are you being serious or are you being like show?
Like, my show serious. Stick?
Yeah.
Both?
Oh, wow.
Right? I mean,
that's how bad the...
I'm pretty sure when we have Ryan on, I'm pretty sure Ryan's going to agree.
Wow.
Like, they've got to change something. And Jake Bischoff playing is what I would change. Like, the serious hockey analysis is something has to change. My response to that is, all right, put Jake Bischoff in the game.
Is the defense that... stunted?
I mean,
it's
the weak part of the team. I mean, they're not scoring goals either, so... But Jake Bischoff
does that. I mean, Jake Bischoff does... Him and Ryan Reeves are the two people that...
But, like, the talent weakness on the team is the defensive spot. So, like, if the obvious place to make a change is there. Although, going off some Jesse Granger, who's in Washington, D.C., his tweets from Morning Skate, it doesn't seem like they're going to make any changes to the defensive side. The offensive side, we'll see. Oh, yeah, we have audio from Jesse Granger. Okay, post-game press conference. Gerard Gallant gets mad at Jesse Granger here. So first off, Ali Lozoff, who's with AT&T Sportsnet, was asking about, in I think it was the third period, Gerard Gallant made a change. He put Ryan Reeves, moved him from the fourth line up to the third line. Ali Lozoff asked him about it, and Gerard Gallant just sort of was like, oh, we were searching for anything to work. Nothing was working. We were searching for anything to work. A few questions later, Jesse Granger tries to follow up on that idea, and this is what happened.
The switching up Carrier and or up to the third line or Reeves.
We just talked about that. Yeah. Like, I just trying to do something, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, it's you're talking Carrier, you're talking Miller. I mean, what are you supposed to do when you're down 4-1? Like, okay. So just trying to get a spark.
Was there a dynamic that you liked with Reeves up
there? I didn't like anything again today.
Shut down The Athletic. Get out of here, The Athletic. But in all seriousness, the Golden Knights are 1-2. They've got 79 more games, and we're already this testy after a loss?
Well, as you pointed out, it's the lack of fight from the looks of it.
We're 3 games in. There's 79 more of them. Like, this is not, like, what happens if they're actually bad? Like, what happens if they actually lose a lot of games?
I'm just visualizing, like, people running down the street in Marc-Andre Fleury jerseys on fire. Just people buildings are burning, the sky is falling.
Right. I love the overreaction to this, by the way. Like, we're 3 games in. None of it, like, if this happened 40 games into the season where they went 1-2 and looked like crap against the Buffalo Sabres, it wouldn't, as long as they, you know, had a good record, it wouldn't matter. We'd be like, yeah, whatever. They're on the road against Buffalo. Yeah, it kind of sucks, but whatever. But because it's the first 3 games of the year and they're 1-2, and I think They've led for less than 5 minutes in their first three games because they scored the first goal in the first game, then lost. And in their only win, they won in a shootout and trailed the entire time until they tied the game with a minute to go in regulation. So they've only been leading for like 5 minutes. So it's not like, if you've been watching the Golden Knights, it's not like, oh, great hockey. It's just, we haven't been able to pull them out. It's been like, oh, they've been losing the entire time I've been watching them play this year. But it's great because it's overreaction because it's three games in.
Do you think they will? I don't know. I'm of two minds. You're absolutely right. Yes, they're overreacting. We are overreacting. The city is overreacting. But
it's all we have to react to.
Well, that, A, and B, you literally just said if you watch them, they don't look right. Like it doesn't. It's not.
They're broken.
It's not losing 5-4. On like a buzzer beater or something like that, or in the final minutes, it's oh, they're not in this. Oh, they can't get back in either. So what is the fan supposed to, and what is the media supposed to react? Is it supposed to like just go, hey, this was a tough loss?
Yeah, you can. You know, it was a really tough loss, losing to New Mexico by 36.
That's a good transition.
Was that loss worse than the loss to Howard last year?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
National perception, it's not. The loss to Howard made national news because it was the largest point spread favorite to lose a game outright. And it was losing to an FCS school. New Mexico's in your conference, even though Howard might be better than New Mexico as a football team. So nationally, no. Potentially, had they been shut out, like if that final score had been 50-0, then you can definitely argue the loss to New Mexico would have been worse. So I still think the loss to Howard's a bigger deal, just because it was a loss to an FCS school, and against New Mexico, yeah, they did okay.
The only thing about Howard that I'm willing to forgive was, they had a new coach who hadn't coached since, what, 2013. He was a previous coach of the year, I think multi-time coach of the year, and all the tape on him was, what, 5 years old, 4 years old, and then Kalen Newton hadn't, there was no tape on him. So you had no idea what defense or offense they were going to be running. You had no idea what was going to happen, basically. Where this, you know who New Mexico is. They've been the triple option team, except when they're not. I know, except when they're not, which is when they run this offense. You knew what was going to happen.
The loss to New Mexico is a bigger slap in the face, though.
Yeah.
Because the lost progress, it's kind of the point I made yesterday, the lost progress. Like, against Howard, the reason they lost to Howard was because they couldn't tackle Kalen Newton. Like, that's why they still scored 40-plus points in the game. The offense was fine in that game. The defense just couldn't tackle one player. That's why they lost the game. They lost to New Mexico because they were bad at everything. Like, the only thing they were good at was blocking an extra point.
And the punter can scoot.
Oh, yes, yeah, a fake punt. They're good. They're excellent at fake punts this year. But they were bad at everything. Like, they had special teams screw-ups. They had obviously had defensive screw-ups, and the offense was horrific. So the New Mexico loss, I mean, you're looking at bad quarterback play. Your star running back gets called out for not running hard enough. You've got bad snaps to the quarterback. The cornerbacks on defense were terrible. The run defense was awful. Special teams fumbles a punt. Like, all around, the Howard game was awful. So
there was a fumble that should have been recovered by the defense that just wasn't.
Yes. Gabe McCoy should have had a fumble recovery early. I think it was 6-0 at that point.
Yep.
Should have had a fumble recovery early. And I think he tried to pick it up and run, and the ball got knocked away, I think, by his teammate. And New Mexico somehow came out with the ball. Aside from all of that, we thought the defense was getting better this year. They're back to being bad. Like, they gave up 252 yeah. rushing yards. Granted, New Mexico ran the ball 60 times, so, like, the yards per carry wasn't ridiculously high, but 252 rushing yards, not good. New Mexico, also playing a backup quarterback, he was 13 of 20 for 250 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks.
A lot of that came over the top, too.
So that was kind of the weird thing, is UNLV They couldn't stop the run. So I wouldn't say they were selling out to stop the run, but they were definitely concerned with stopping the run, and it left their cornerbacks one-on-one, and they couldn't defend anybody one-on-one. So they kind of couldn't stop the run while moving their safeties closer and couldn't stop the pass with their cornerbacks playing one-on-one. Not going to win very much. Jericho Flowers got benched at one point in this game because he couldn't do anything over the top. Like, the defense was just not good at all.
He did have the blocked extra point.
He did. He did block the extra point. That was a good job by Jericho Flowers. But, like, they only made one play on defense, and it was that touchdown that got called back. That was a very strange play. That was it.
I made a hand motion.
To kill the segment?
What?
What?
No, I said I made a hand motion that killed the touchdown that should have been a touchdown. Anyway.
Yeah, my joke was it killed the segment.
I know. But that's only because you didn't roll with it.
I cut you off. I did cut you off. I was like Gerard Gallant cutting off Jesse Granger. Don't let you get the question in there. Ryan Wallace will join us a little bit later. We got the briefs coming up next. Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try out the Be Connected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
The Raiders have allowed the most yards per play through 5 weeks of any defense since 1970.
That's from Steve Cofield on Cofield & Company yesterday. Can we trust him with numbers?
I don't see why not.
All right.
We're going to trust him with, what was it, Good Feet and Swagger and all the other products. So I think we endorse his stats as well.
The Raiders really have the slowest defense in the NFL, don't they?
Yeah, it's not close.
Like, they couldn't defend a screen pass on Sunday. Austin Eckler, who's the backup running back, had a 44-yard screen pass where he didn't get touched. He didn't high-five any of his teammates, so that's progress for the Raiders. And then Melvin Gordon had a screen pass that I think he went 33 yards on it, where the only reason he didn't score is because he tripped on the feet of one of his offensive linemen who was running down the field with nobody to block. Like, the Raiders are really slow, and they can't defend anything in space.
Well, that would be fine if they could defend goal line runs, or they could defend against the run, but there was at least, what, two Melvin Gordon runs that were just he didn't get touched until he got to the safety, or he walked right into the end zone. Like, anybody want to? No? Okay. Touchdown.
They even ran. Oh, they had a touchdown. They had a screen pass to their backup tight end. They went for a touchdown where the guy wasn't touched. 13 yards. It wasn't the breaking 40 yards. But, like, they couldn't defend screen passes in this game. You go back to the game against Miami, they couldn't defend anything that was some sort of end-around, like whether it was the pop pass or just a regular end-around. Like, they just, fast guy starts running around the corner, and there's just like, oh, God, we can't catch him. Like, this is just the slowest defense ever.
But at least, you know, they're bringing in guys like Dominique Rogers, Cromartie, and
who could be here for the future, could yeah. really help them out in who 2020.
Can teach them all how to get a little bit faster.
Now they go to London to play the Seahawks on Sunday.
Seahawks aren't particularly fast, are they?
No.
Maybe. I mean, yeah.
Everyone is.
Russell?
I mean, it was like Albert Wilson for the Dolphins that torched them, so it's like...
Well, Albert Wilson is legitimately
Yeah,
fast.
But it's not like Albert Wilson is doing that every week to everybody. Like, that's probably going to be Albert Wilson's best career game ever, unless he gets to play John Gruden's defense again next year.
Derek Carr has thrown zero touchdowns and six interceptions when pressured this season.
That's from Pro Football Focus. I don't know how much we buy into their pressured statistics. It's probably not, whatever, it's subjective what pressure is, but I do buy into the fact that Derek Carr hasn't been good under pressure.
He never has.
32 out of 36 in QB rating when facing pressure.
If you go back and look at the year that he was good that got him all that money, he had one of the best offensive lines in football.
Yeah. Left tackle Colton Miller against the Chargers. 41 pass blocking snaps allowed, three sacks and eight pressures.
The best part of watching that game was when the broadcast, they went, oh, they've got a great tackle in Colton Miller, and immediately afterwards he'd let a guy just like bull rush him.
He's apparently playing hurt though. Kelechi Osemele did not play in this game with a knee injury. After the game, Colton Miller said that he has the same knee injury as Kelechi Osemele. But he's playing, and Osimile's not. Why? Why is he playing? That's like, we're talking about them tanking this year? This is terrible tanking. This is your first-round draft pick as starting at left tackle. You don't need to play him through an injury when you're tanking. Get him out of there. Let Osimile play. That dude's older. He's not going to be here in 3 years.
Fun conspiracy theory. Everyone in the office knows that they're tanking. All the players know that they're tanking. John Gruden doesn't. Marc-Andre Fleury is not expected to play in Pittsburgh on Thursday.
Tweet from Jesse Granger, and this was before they lost to Buffalo. Conceivably could change, but Fleury is supposedly going to play Wednesday in Washington, Friday in Philadelphia, and that means Malcolm Subban would play, Saturday in Philadelphia. That means Malcolm Subban would play Thursday in Pittsburgh on the second night of a back-to-back. So no Marc-Andre Fleury back in Pittsburgh, which means how are Penguins fans going to bandwagon onto a good team?
That's funny.
Are you aware of how Penguins fans were last year?
Yeah.
It's so annoying.
Do it for Fleury.
It's so annoying. Yeah. I hate it so much.
Aren't they really happy with the goalie they have?
Well, he just got another concussion. Yeah, that's why. Their general manager gave the Golden Knights a second round pick to make sure that they would take Fleury. But no, Matt Murray, the goalie they chose over Fleury, which he's younger and had better stats the year before, is out with another concussion. So the Golden Knights won't face Matt Murray on Thursday.
How often is the goalie getting hit in the head?
NHL? Yeah, a lot. This happens quite a bit. So yeah.
I thought that's why they give him a special mask.
Yeah, no, Fleury's had concussion problems too.
UNLV is offering an all-you-can-eat ticket plan for basketball.
You did not read that properly.
So UNLV is offering an all-you-can-eat...
Eat all you can.
Oh, I didn't read that properly. Eat all you can ticket plan.
Yeah,
oh,
for some reason
it's rhyme.
Does it? Eat all you can ticket plan? I put the word plan in there. That's not from them. I don't know why it's all you can eat, or why it's eat all you can instead of not all you can eat.
Probably some legalese.
I literally asked that question. They were like, no, this is what we named it.
We've never been to a buffet.
So it's strange. But they did this for football too. Here's what you get for basketball. You get tickets to 5 games, unlimited hot dogs, nachos, popcorn, and soda at those games for $90. That's $90 total, not per game. $90 gets you a ticket to 5 games plus unlimited food.
That actually seems like a really good deal.
Yeah, it's $18 per game is what it comes out to. So $18 gets you. And again, this is the upper level. You can pay more and get lower level seats or whatever, but this is the upper level for $18 and unlimited food.
Man, if you had like 2 little kids, that's like 5 like adventures.
The other part of this, the strange part of this maybe, is they're giving you the best games in this ticket package. The games you get, Loyola Marymount, Cincinnati, Nevada, San Diego State, Boise State.
Well, I think that there's been a problem with a home court advantage where it's you could hear a pin drop inside Thomas
and
Mack during...
Bad. But like, okay, terrific deal. Like if you're a UNLV fan... And you're like, yeah, I want to go watch the team play, and you want to see them play the good teams. You can do that for pretty cheap and get unlimited food with it. Like, it's a terrific deal. It's probably a bad sign of the health of their ticket sales for basketball this year that they're offering this for the best games. Like, if they had busted this out and it was for, like, the San Jose State game and the Air Force game and one of these early non-conference games, you'd be like, yeah, okay, they need some help getting people to show up to watch San Jose State play basketball. But you'd like to think UNLV Nevada and basketball wouldn't need a special ticket deal to sell well.
But again, if you've been to the stadium at any of these rivalry games in the last 2-3 years, bring on the specials.
Should they do it for all games then?
I would be down, but I don't get to go to the games anymore.
Oh, yeah, you got to work. You got to be here. Sitting in here listening to me yelling on a pregame show.
I would eat all the hot dogs.
Would you? I don't think I can eat more than 2 hot dogs at one time. Probably only like 1.5 at one time.
You've got the build of a competitive hot dog eater.
I like hot dogs, but for whatever reason, it's a food that I get very tired of after I eat one. Like, I eat one, and then if I start on the second one, I'm like, yeah, I'm over this taste. I'm over this taste. We're done.
UNLV is moving the basketball court from Thomas and Mack out to Sam Boyd Stadium.
Preseason showcase. They've done this once before when they moved it downtown. Okay. It's not going to be in Sam Boyd Stadium. It's going to be outside of Sam Boyd Stadium before the game a week from Friday against Air Force. The football game, I should say. So a week from Friday is the next home game for football. It's Air Force. It's homecoming. They're going to have basketball's preseason showcase out at Sam Boyd beforehand, and they're taking the court from Thomas and Mack and moving it out there. Most of the comments on this were about attendance and people making 2 jokes, same joke, but going different directions. One, people saying, this is the only way to get people to show up for UNLV football games.
This is the only way for people to show up to UNLV basketball games.
Pretty much. Which, for funny, I enjoyed those. But
what's funny is neither are wrong.
So, I don't know. We'll see how this goes. I like the showcase things. They did it a couple years ago downtown, and it was fun. Last year, they did it just in the Thomas and Mack, did a dunk contest where nobody could dunk. It was not good. But I do like the events themselves because it's just a very loose environment of, hey, they're just going to shoot some and do some dunks or whatever and maybe scrimmage, but I don't think they're scrimmaging this year. But yeah, it'll be good. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about them sort of lapping it up with football. Like, I don't know if that's going to make it better or worse or make football better or worse or what.
I mean, it gives you more to do pregame, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to end up being negligible because I think my guess is the people that would go to the UNLV basketball preseason showcase are the people that go to UNLV football. Like, that crowd is basically the same group of people. So I'm guessing it's going to be kind of negligible.
It's a Venn diagram that's just a circle.
It's just one circle, yeah.
Yep. Did you want more briefs, or?
Yeah, we got one more, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm already in midseason form. Utah State is ranked 25th by S&P Plus.
Love S&P Plus. It's an advanced stat. That's who UNLV plays next, by the way. Utah State this year lost to Michigan State 38-31 to open the season. Since then, 4 straight wins and 42 points is the fewest they've scored in those 4 wins.
They're quite good.
This is a tough spot for UNLV when you're sort of looking for a bounce back game. You're playing probably the best team in the Mountain West in Utah State on the road. Tony Sanchez actually said yesterday, he was like, maybe it'll be a good thing to wake us up. We got to go play the best team on the road. Like, we're going to get punched in the face. Like, maybe that'll be a good thing. So
all our kids will have concussions.
That's right. He did reference last year. They kind of did something similar where they went on the road and beat Fresno State with Johnny Stanton as the quarterback instead of Armani Rogers. So maybe Max Gillum's going to throw for 300 yards against Utah State.
Maybe. I don't believe that he will.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Bischoff.
The
The Arizona Coyotes, even with NHL players in the lineup, aren't very good, so I can't imagine their AHL and ECHL players are even, you know, remotely close. But, I mean, that top line, it wasn't even fair last night. I mean, it really wasn't.
Barstow scored, what was it, 16 seconds into the first period and 41 seconds into the second period.
He was pacing himself in the second period, for sure.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Ryan Wallace, at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter.
Just tweeted it now.
That you're on the show?
Yeah.
Good timing.
I know.
Host of Rink Rats with Jesse Granger.
Did you forget?
Of The Athletic. The Athletic's a good
spot.
Can we
talk about that?
About what? The aspiring journalist?
About the aspiring journalist comment. That was fantastic.
That was good.
I think more so than Gallant shutting the question down, which was a valid question. And like, I don't know, if I'm Granger and I'm in that situation, I want to know if Gerard saw anything that he might be able to use, you know, tomorrow against Washington. Like, was there the dynamic question? Was there a dynamic that you liked? It was not the same question.
All right, hold on. Let's play the audio first. This is Jesse Granger asking a follow-up about Ryan Reeves getting moved to the third line and Gerard Gallant not being happy about it.
The switching up Carrier and Robert up to the third line or Reeves?
We just talked about that. Yeah. Like, I just trying to do something, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you're talking Carrier, you're talking Miller. I mean, what are you supposed to do when you're down 4-1? Like, okay. So just trying to get a spark.
Was there a dynamic that you liked with Reeves up
there? I didn't like anything again today.
Is there a chance Gerard Gallant did not know Ryan Reeves is playing on the third line during the third period?
See, conventional wisdom wants me to say yes, but I've been told that there's no way Gerard Gallant doesn't understand or know what's going on with his team in game. So
he just likes to give off that impression to us sometimes.
I mean, he was very confused about the Colin Miller question. Like, yes. Hey, you guys switched up Colin Miller and you played him with Shea Theodore looking for more offense. He's like, what? Ryan McGill does all that stuff. I don't do the defense. But no, listen, I just want to know, was there something that you saw? Like, I get that you didn't like anything from that day, but I think what Granger was trying to do was say, is this something we might see on Wednesday? Or we might see Ryan Reeves play up on the third line, or are we going to see Nosek Carrier Belmar together in a fourth line? Because you went to that. Did you see anything you liked? And I get it. Gerard's upset. He's not happy. He doesn't like to lose.
It's funny, right, that he's that upset after game three of the season.
You know what? I don't think it's that funny. Because if they were playing well and losing, I don't think he'd be like that. But they're not playing well.
So are the Golden Knights bad?
They're bad through three games.
All right.
Like, game one was bad. Game three was bad. Game two was better, but not as dynamic as you'd expect them to be. I mean, they're not playing hard enough. And like, we can talk about the intangibles all we want to, but this team does its best work when they're outworking opponents. Have you seen them outwork any team other than Minnesota?
Uh-oh. They're resting on their laurels. What's a laurel, by the way?
It's something that
I hated that saying coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, I don't. Why'd you say it then?
I don't know.
Like, you're in complete control of whatever comes out of your mouth.
Yeah,
and you
I wanted
say
to make
that?
A cliche joke.
Yeah, well,
I came up with one that was
stupid. We got enough coach speak in the Granger cut, right?
That's true.
Listen, are the Golden Knights a bad team? I don't think so, but they're not a good team through three games. Like, I don't think that they've outplayed their opponent more often than their opponent has outplayed them. I know the analytics would tell you otherwise. I heard you guys talking about that.
They've got pretty good underlying.
I mean,
their
Corsi's fine. Their shot volume's fine. You know, we can get into block shots if we want to, but we're not going to do that. That's best served for Twitter and a thread that devolved into something ridiculous. But, you know, my point is the Golden Knights will get their chances. They'll start to get some bounces. They'll start to get some puck luck, but the underlying issue isn't so much what they're trying to do on offense. It's the lapses in the defensive zone, and they're just not skating. They're not skating. They're not playing Golden Knights hockey. They're not skating.
Can Paul Stastny score?
That's a loaded question. He hasn't shown that he can for the first three games. But you didn't bring Paul Stastny in here to be a goal scorer.
Well, I mean, you
expect Paul Stastny to pot like 15, maybe 20.
Right.
20 is like a high for him. it's going to be setting up. It's going to be assist. It's going to be vision, finding Pacioretty, finding Holla, those types of things. That
Let me rephrase this. Stastny's can they score with Paul Stastny on the ice?
That also remains to be seen. I think they can. I mean, listen, I've been talking about it for a long time. I think Alex Tuch is a better fit on that second line than Eric Holla is, just because of the fact that Alex Tuch is a north-south player. He really likes to go to the front of the net. He's really good on the forecheck. He closes that distance, which was sorely lacking in the game last night. They could not touch the defensemen of the Buffalo Sabres. Like, the Sabres were able to break out of their own zone with such ease that it allowed them to play a transition game, and Vegas was on their heels.
Don't let me misquote you, but I believe you said on the post-game show yesterday you would be surprised if it's the same lineup.
I would be incredibly surprised.
I think you said it would be a mistake was the word you used, if they had the same lineup.
How many times did we hear from Gerard Gallant? Like, even if the team didn't play well and they would win a game, he wouldn't change anything because they won. And he'd only change things after losses. He needs to change something right now.
Is Absolutely. It Jake Bischoff?
Okay, because I heard you this morning driving in.
Put words in your mouth by saying you'll agree with me?
By saying that I'd agree with you. I want to not agree with you.
But you have to.
No. Okay, listen. Brad Hunt, I think, is a better skater and a better option when it comes to breaking out. I also think that he's more aggressive in the neutral zone. He'll stand up. He won't have as many odd man rushes against, assuming he doesn't get caught, but that's always kind of the risk with Brad Hunt. I will agree with you that I think there needs to be a change on defense. I will...
Too early, Terry. You didn't say Jake Bischoff yet.
I don't know that it's Jake Bischoff.
Thanks for saving me.
I will qualify that by saying, if you're looking for somebody that's a little bit more of a dynamic skater, I would go with Brad Hunt. But if what you are looking for is better, you know, safer option, I'd say maybe Jake Bischoff. I don't think it's a mistake putting Jake Bischoff in here. Let me just say that.
Do you know how badly I want Jake Bischoff to play against the Capitals, them to beat the Capitals, so that I can tweet out the Golden Knights would be Stanley Cup champions if Jake Bischoff had played in the playoffs last year?
That's a stretch, though.
If they win one regular season game the next season in Washington, it's a stretch to say they would have beaten the Capitals in the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's flawless logic.
No, not at all. Not even close.
Ipso facto.
Cody Eakin is apparently ready to go.
No more baby blue, powder blue. I like it.
So what do you think the third line looks like?
Well, I think Cody Eakin at center. I would flirt around a little bit with the idea of maybe moving Tomáš Nosek up and then moving Eric Holla down. So maybe you got Holla and Eakin together.
So you say you think that Tuck fits better on that second line. Do you think there's a chance Nosek fits better on that second line than Holla does?
I think that probably anybody would fit better than Eric Holla. And it's not like it's not anything against Eric Holla. I just haven't seen it. Like, I think Tomáš Nosek is a little bit more of a north-south player. I think that he, when he's up with guys that are a little bit more talented, offensively minded players, he always kind of shows up and performs. With Holla, he's not scoring goals with Stastny and Pacioretty on the ice. Like, Holla's goal last night was not with his line mates on the ice. It was Marchessault and Carlson. He got caught on a line change.
Did he do that on purpose, though? He's like, maybe screw this second line.
It's possible. I don't know. Like, you've got to play around with things. Like, I don't think that the Holla Stastny Pacioretty thing is working quite yet. I mean, they played a really good game in Minnesota, but they were not very good against Buffalo. I think you just get a little bit of a different look.
I never know how much to blame goalies, so I tend to just blame them all the time, period. Obviously, when you let Jack Eichel get all alone in front of Marc-Andre Fleury, the biggest problem is not Marc-Andre Fleury.
No, but not at all.
How much do they need Fleury to bail them out more, even when a chance like that comes up? Because what happened. Like, that's a big reason why they were good last year, is because Fleury would bail them out in situations like that.
I'm going to point to a play that happened with Jack Eichel and Marc-Andre Fleury in the second period, where Jack Eichel was looking for his hat trick goal and he just blows around Colin Miller like Miller's standing still, even though he was skating and trying really hard. And then Marc-Andre Fleury comes out, two pad stack, poke check, gets the puck away from Eichel, and it's a huge save, right? But because it was already 4-1 at the time, nobody really pays attention to that play. That's a huge play. And it was another situation where Jack Eichel just completely skates around your defense in all alone, and Marc-Andre Fleury comes up with a big play. Is he always going to do it? No. But he did it. It's just unfortunate that he had to do it like seven times and wasn't able to do it seven times. Like, Jack Eichel all alone in the slot is not a good look ever. And it happened like three times last night.
You know, wouldn't let that happen, right?
Who wouldn't let that happen?
Jake Bischoff.
I don't think that's true.
Are you sure?
Jack Eichel.
Have you ever seen Jack Eichel open in the slot when he's playing against Jake Bischoff?
No, because he's never played against Jake Bischoff because Jake Bischoff is not an NHL player.
Should have finished it, no.
I didn't.
The answer to that question is no.
The answer to that question that you want is no. The real answer to that question is no, because Jake Bischoff has never played against Jack Eichel in an NHL game.
The answer is no. Technically, the answer is no.
Okay.
What's wrong with the power play?
I mean, you're missing Alex Tuch.
Is that it?
Like, yeah, it's that probably. Simple? I mean, you're missing Nate Schmidt. You're missing Alex Tuch. Like, you're missing regulars on your power play. It's going to take a little bit of time.
Put Ryan Reeves up there.
Ryan Carpenter is on one of your power play units.
Why him instead of Ryan Reeves?
I don't know.
Like, it started as a joke for me in the preseason, but it's kind of become serious now. Ryan Reeves should be on the power play.
I think that you could throw Ryan Reeves in there for Ryan Carpenter, and I don't know that it would be much of a difference, except for the fact that Ryan Reeves just seems to score goals when no one expects him to. So why not? Like, at this point, why not? I'm all for it. I think Nosek on one of the power play units makes a lot of sense. I would like to see them kind of load up with Miller and Theodore, but the question then becomes, who the heck do you put on there for the second unit? And that's maybe why I'd say Brad Hunt over Jake Bischoff, because I think Brad Hunt will give you some power play minutes. He's got a nice shot from the point. He's got really good vision up at the top there. So that's kind of why I'd like to see Brad Hunt in there more so than Jake Bischoff, because I think he's going to help out the power play.
What if Nate Schmidt just didn't get busted for steroids?
Oof. I don't think this team would be as bad defensively.
2-1?
Probably.
All right.
Like, you know, the two losses, you can pin them specifically on absolute blown coverage in the defensive zone, right? Like, Philly, blown coverages. Buffalo, blown coverage, right?
It's not good when Shea Theodore and Derek Englund are both below the goal line.
It's not good when any defensive pair is below the goal line and you've got a guy in the slot wide open. It's also not good to allow passes through the center of the ice in succession. I mean, that's not good either. It's not good when you have three centers on the ice and nobody takes the slot. Nobody takes the center of the ice. And it's also not good when you've got a defenseman in the corner working over Sam Reinhart, and then all of a sudden Derek Englund, for reasons unknown to anybody, decides to leave the slot area and go support when there's already a forward there.
Doesn't Are the San sense. Jose Sharks bad too?
They appear to be.
You have a smile on your face as you say that. You want them to be bad,
well,
don't
it
you?
Just it, because it would be really funny if, like, the two teams that loaded up the most
were terrible
in the Pacific Division, the ones that made the biggest splash, just were not very good. Like, I'm not suggesting that they're not. I just think it would be really funny. Meanwhile, the Ducks are 3-0, and John
Gibson.
Because
they got black jerseys.
Yeah, no. Those jerseys.
They're going to win the division with black jerseys.
They're so bad. If they go to the playoffs, do the Ducks wear those jerseys at home exclusively?
The black ones? Probably. Yeah. Why wouldn't they?
Because they're bad.
They're wonderful.
They're not good.
They're pretty good, actually.
Did you see the jerseys that came out in warmups?
Where they wear the white ones?
The original white ones. They're so much better.
But they can't wear those now because the NHL
changed
it.
They can wear the maroon and teal ones at home.
No, the black ones
that jersey's supposed to be maroon.
The black ones are fine. I thought it was eggplant.
Oh, God, it's the same thing.
Well, it's not. Purple, it's maroon, eggplant.
They're basically the same thing.
Oh, big difference there.
I don't think so.
Ryan Wallace here.
You run out of things to say?
I was going to ask you, were you guys for the pregame show yesterday?
We were at Parkway Tavern on Marks.
Where are you tomorrow? Are you somewhere tomorrow?
Yeah, we'll be at Parkway again. So come say
hi.
On
Thursday?
Thursday we'll be at Lindo MichoCon.
Jesus, you get just
Desert,
like,
Inn and Eastern.
You just get to go work at all these restaurants during the week.
We are all over the place, yeah. We'll for tomorrow and Thursday, we're going to be doing the show out there too, because it's just... Because
it's not a noon game.
It's just too quick of a turnaround, yeah. So
you can do a regular VGK Insider show out there.
Yeah,
do all the toilets work out there? You don't have to fix any of those?
I didn't look for extra work to do,
okay.
So I'm not sure.
You weren't searching it out?
Fine, yeah.
So Parkway Tavern tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Lindo Michoacan on Thursday.
Yep.
For Ryan Wallace, yep. Frank Harnish, the VGK Insider Show, 2 to 3,
yep.
And also the pre and post game show.
That is correct.
That's good. How come we aren't doing UNLV pregame shows from restaurants?
Because you're doing them from the stadium.
Yeah, those are the home games. The road games, I'm here, though.
But, I mean, do you want to be out?
No.
Okay.
I was going to say.
Make it happen now. Somebody sell this. I want Tyler Bischoff to do something he doesn't
want. You guys are taking calls, right?
We are taking
post-game
calls.
Show? Are they angry? How upset are they?
Like, I would say 60% of the calls are telling us that we're doing a really good job, and then 100% of the calls are asking us what the heck happened to this team.
Hey, Ryan, you guys are doing great. Why do the Golden Knights suck now?
More or less, yeah.
That's great.
That's probably what it is. That's a split.
You know, because you want the Golden Knights to be good, but you also want things like the last three games to happen so people are still like, oh, God, they suck.
See, the problem
is... You still want that in the back of people's minds.
See, the problem is we didn't get any phone calls again when they won in Minnesota.
So yeah, no, that's
the problem.
You
only want to call when they're bad.
Right, that's right. You want them to be good because good is better than bad. It's more fun. But, like, you want along the way the bumps so people are like, whoa, they suck, fire everybody.
I also love to see angry Gerard Gallant. It's kind of fun.
Especially when he takes it out on Jesse Granger.
Aspiring journalist.
The aspiring journalist that is
that works
Jesse
for
Granger.
The Athletic.
The Athletic. This is home of aspiring journalists. Ryan Wallace at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming in. As always, this has been Technically Correct. I got no joke to end the show.
Yo, suck it,
Tyler!